Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone this evening, 12 noon time, Saturday morning. The date is May 23rd, 2015. And y'all listen to Missing Pages of History. As always, our program is geared towards giving you information so you can think, and more importantly, introducing you to various issues and topics so you can gather a better understanding of your world and how to change it. Tonight, our theme will be geared around the theme Two Societies and Different Rules of the Game, Trying to Understand. That's our theme tonight. In the context of discussing our theme, we have a host of supporters and missing pages, history viewers or listeners who will be joining us today and giving their perspectives on some of the very issues and concepts and ideas that were raised. And we would also like to involve you into the discussion by joining us at 818-337-0016, 818-337-0016. If you have any views or comments, please dial 1 and we will entertain your comments or your views. So at this point in time, on behalf of Mr. Page of History, our special guest today, our callers and supporters, we have with us Anthony, New Jersey, Haki out of Richmond, Virginia. We have Susie out of Richmond, Virginia. We have Mayor out of Boston. And we have Brother Moses out of Maryland. Those have been and those are some of Mr. Page of His Review viewers and supporters. And we'd like to encourage all supporters and viewers and people who listen to Mr. Page of History to join us today as we discuss the theme, Two Societies and Different Rules of the Game, trying to understand it. First, to our special guest today, we'd like to put this on the table. Recently, this past week, in Waco, Texas, there was a host of motorcycle gangs collided together in Waco, and where there was shootout, disturbances, deaths, etc., as well as a conflict with the law. Now, in terms of how the media has articulated how they have presented this particular incident in Waco, I would like to ask our participant today, what analysis can we draw? What can we draw how the media has presented the shootout among gang members, the bikers, in Waco, Texas, as compared to other incidents that have occurred and how they dealt with it and how they presented it? I'd like to start out with you first, Brother Haki. What's your assessment on how the media and how the law agency has played or how they have, you know, addressed and dealt with this incident in Waco, Texas?
Well, I think it comes down to the question in terms of narrative. One is a clear demarcation when we talk about narratives as related to African people and as related to white people. So the narrative as related to white people is never to characterize them as terrorists, as criminals, as the drag of society, but rather to find some sociological meaning in terms of their actions. If you look at the kind of action taken by the military, by the police in response to that massive shooting by these white gangs, that was in the usual, you know, bang bang, shoot them up, you know, kill them, you know, eliminate, you know, the drag of society. It was characterized as a misunderstanding or a situation going awry, in which unfortunately they resolved the situation by engaging in some gunfire. But of course, that kind of thing is expected when you're trying to merely, you know, disputes. So clearly the narrative is quite different as opposed to African people. In the situation we have African people who are actually shooting like that, engaging in society, you have a more military response from the police in terms of, you know, using gunfire as justification for police to kill, you know, hundreds of those people, well, not hundreds, but tens of people who were participated in a gunfire. So clearly the narrative is that, you know, one thing they don't want to do, the ruling class don't want to do, is to create a narrative which causes people to think about the really sociological issues that are happening in society and why people behave the way they behave. As long as you can characterize white criminal behavior as somehow benign, then you don't have to really, you know, you prevent people from really coming to some analysis in terms of what's really going on in society. So I think that's the difference in terms of response to the white gang criminal behavior versus, say, behavior by, you know, African people. So it clearly is about controlling the narrative.
Okay. Brother Mayor, what would be your take on how the law agency and the media have presented and dealt with this case in Waco, Texas?
I agree with Haki about the control of the narrative. The media has a definite control of the narrative for the masses. But I see it a little differently. I see the bikers being defined fairly clearly as a criminal element, a potential criminal element, but that narrative holds that is the exception to the general white population. And these particular white criminals are very specific, being bikers, gang-banging bikers, and very much advertised as and shown to be very different and very particular. And being of the white mass, in as much as they do that, there is a kind of unstated comparison with a group of others, which is African Americans and others, people of color, who are considered others and generally posited as criminal or criminally inclined in general, in the mass, especially among the lower income groupings. And so these folks are in some ways suggested of being of that underclass, general underclass. This is where the class element in American society comes in. And that the underclasses and lower classes considered to be criminal elements or potentially criminal elements. So there's some similarity there, but the aspect of whiteness is always present, even though it's used in this case, I think, to show that these are whites that are different from, these are the violent whites, supposedly. These are certainly not the white-collar whites who have access to policy and send drones out across the world. So that's what I'm seeing. The media is maintaining the narrative that way.
Excellent. Anthony, I'd like to give you an opportunity to give me your narrative on how you think this incident would have played out if there was so-called two large rival groups within the African community had a shootout where you've confiscated over 1,000 guns or more, 9 people got shot, and you even attempted to shoot at the police. Give me your narrative in terms of, based on the history of how the game is played when it comes to law enforcement, when dealing with people of color and large gatherings, such as the one that took place in Waco. What would be in the final analysis of what you think might would have happened and how that story would have been told by the media?
I think it would have been told somewhat differently. I think they would have, the people would have been portrayed as terrorists. And the police response would have been much more different, and that there would have been a much higher level of bloodshed. given the history of police relations with African people in this society. People need to understand that the primary role of police in society is to protect the property of the ruling class, which in the context of this society happens to be the wealthy Europeans. And any perceived threat you know, to that property is acted upon. And the fact that the primary role of the police is to protect and serve and save lives is a myth, as far as the masses of African people are concerned. The primary role of the police is to protect property and serve the interests of the ruling class, which excludes the overwhelming majority of us.
Okay. We have Susie on the phone. Susie, you saw the incident in Waco. As a female, what came to your mind when you were looking at how this narrative was being played out in the media in response to the police department?
The only thing I think with what happened in Waco with the motorcyclists, when I think about the blacks get together around Memorial Day and they have their ride, it's going to put extra security and other variables against them because of what happened in Waco, even though normally the black motorcyclists normally don't react like they did in Waco. So it just puts an extra strain on them to actually walk a straight line because they're going to be willing to provoke them so they can have a situation making it look like we're really a problem versus what happened in Waco.
And Brother Moses, last but not least, what is your take on this Waco incident? How you view it?
This typifies this racist system, this racist government, this racist society we live in. This is the epitome of it. It's mishandled like these were some juvenile delinquents that had a balloon, water balloon fight or something. And instead of a shootout with people getting killed, It's totally, totally a double standard. If black, these people had been black, the police would have mowed them down themselves. This is the epitome of this racist system. I'm so pissed off right now. I can't be logical. I'm sorry. Thank you.
And then now, you know, we said our theme today is we're dealing with two societies and different rules of the game, trying to understand it. Now, recently, this past week, there was a video that came out dealing with a young man whose name is James Brown. Matter of fact, he was a sergeant. Sergeant James Brown, he's 26. He was a survivor of two tours in Iraq. And recently, there was a tape that came out where this young man was literally killed inside a prison. He was smuggled to death. And some tapes came out by the El Paso newspaper that they was able to get this videotape showing what really took place back in December 2012 of the killing of James, of the killing of Sergeant James Brown. Anthony, I know we had a chance to talk a little bit about this case in terms of the behavior of six policemen inside the prison. They outright smuggle and kill and torture this veteran who served two terms in Iraq War. What do you make of the attitude or the behavior of what is going on with African people when they are incarcerated and the treatment that law enforcement is imposing or the way the law enforcement is terrorizing them in these prisons? What do you make of that in terms of how do we hold these law enforcement individuals accountable to their behavior as acting as an official officer?
Mm-hmm. as we discussed, this is a reflection of the very low value that is placed on African life in this society. And bear in mind that this was a military official that got that was killed in prison. Let's see. And as in fact, he wasn't a veteran. He was actually an active duty soldier. As a matter of fact, according to the video, he was anxious, according to what his mother said, he was anxious to get out of jail as soon as possible because he was supposed to report for duty Monday. So we're talking about a situation of an active duty African soldier whose primary role is to protect the interests of the very forces that killed him. And I see a certain certain irony in that, because the primary role of any military official is to protect the ruling class interests of those he's serving, similar to the police, except on on a different level. And I think this reflects the fact that even that no matter how loyal you are to the system, your life isn't really worth anything as far as the ruling class is concerned. And the thing about it, regardless of what his medical history of any that level of brute force applied would have killed anyone, even if they were in perfect health.
Yeah, finish your point, brother. Finish your point.
No, I was confessing the point that that this is a consequence of living in a settler colony. There's a rule for the settlers who invaded this land and took the land from the American Indian, and another set of rules for everybody else who's under the thumb of the European settlers.
Susie, as a female, when you saw this video, tell us, how did you feel? Went through your mind?
Could you repeat the question? My phone cut off. Could you repeat the question?
I said, as a female, when you saw this video of this young African male being brutalized, tortured in prison for no reason at all, Sergeant James Brown, what went through your mind when you first saw that video?
When I first saw it, thinking of the mothers and what they are going through when they realize their kids aren't given a chance, you know, what do you do, the frustration level and everything. And just to think, these individuals that do this thing, when they walk away from it, how do they feel, you know, where's that humanity for people, regardless to him, even if he had did a crime, it didn't justify what they did to him. And it's the sad thing about it, it's just constantly happening, and it's just frustrating. How do you stop it, or what can you do to stop it, to make sure that these young people don't have to die the way they do, even if they committed a crime? Where are all the rules and everything gone? There's no rules anymore. The police, the forces can do anything they want, and they'll justify what they say.
Let me just give a little bit of description in terms of what took place with Sergeant James Brown when he entered into the prison system inside his cell, based upon the video. Now, one of the things people need to realize is that he was stopped under a DWI. He had already been to court, and he had was given, I think, appropriately maybe 5 days. He had done 3 days. And he called his mom, told his mom that he was going back in. He volunteered to come back to the jail to do the remaining 2 days on the weekend, which was approved by the courts. Well, when he went in, he thought he'll be coming out in 2 days. That changes. The time he went to the jail, he stated that the police officers told him that he would be doing 7 days. And he raised the issue that based upon the court order, he only had 2 days remaining. But in that process, during that time, they literally put him in a hole where they made him develop internal bleeding throughout his chest for a long period of time. While they were torturing him with these techniques of about 6 police officers, they later on took some kind of mask and put it over his face to make it so that it would be very difficult for him to bleed. Now, based on the autopsy, it's reported that his death came as a result of this internal punishment that he received, and that, you know, there was no justification for this kind of death outside of being intentional. And they have, just to see a man crying for his life, telling him over 20 times or more, he cannot breathe, and it's just watching him and torturing him more. There must be some kind of madness in terms of this question of publicizing this kind of death. Because historically, we must remember, as African people, when they used to hang us, it used to become a large public display. Is this a continuation of this kind of behavior, Brother Hackey, in terms of trying to send us a message? If so, what is the message? How do you deal with why we continue to see this kind of torture among African people in the public over and over again? What is that they're trying to communicate to people of color, particularly African people in this country?
Well, it comes down to the value of life or lack of value of life. One of the things that we can't get around is this historical precedent in terms of how African people are perceived. In the context of this Western nation, is the notion that things define the human being. It is that kind of a mindset which predisposes people to not only not value African life, but to snuff it out whenever they feel like it's justifiable. So the problem is that you have a situation with James Brown in which, you know, his life wasn't being important. And this is part and parcel of anytime you're incarcerated, the assumption is that, in fact, you're dealing with people who are scum of the earth. And so, therefore, in addition to that, you got a situation where, given the color of his skin and given the historical reality for African people in the society, all that made it so easy for his white captors to simply to kill him despite his cries of, you know, can't breathe, can't breathe, can't breathe. You also had the same situation in Staten Island, New York, when a young man, you know, told the police he can't breathe and can't breathe, but the hostilities didn't cease. The hostilities actually escalated. In other words, the unconscious desire to literally kill became more ingrained. And as a consequence, as opposed to stopping their actions, they increased their action and showing that the young man, in this case James Brown, and a young brother in Staten Island were actually die. So it's part and parcel of the history about people in society. And one of the things we have to understand is that with the deterioration of capitalist society, as society tends to say that some people are worth more than others, then we can anticipate that more of these kinds of hardships, more of these kinds of deaths are going to continue to escalate as time goes on. And there's no getting around it. The only thing we can stop that is through mass organization and awareness. But, of course, that process continues.
Brother Mel,
mm-hmm.
One of the things we note is that when we look at those officers who are occupying space in the African community, we notice that they receive their salaries based upon the taxes that they get from the people. Now, one of the things that we are interested in is that when you talk about communities of color, you have majority of the communities are made of people of color, but most of the officers who are supposed to serve and protect, they are of European in nature. For example, I just learned recently from the News Observer from the North Carolina newspaper that was reported to me that over $6,000 to $8,000 a year in salary are being paid to policemen who are on the police force of the Dallas County police force department. They get paid a salary of $68,000 a year. And if you're an officer or more, you make over $100,000 a year. Now, my question that I would like to raise for you in terms of looking at how they're using our taxpayer money that's not serving the interests of the people. How do we address this whole question of accountability? I noticed recently there was a six policemen in Baltimore. What do you think about this indictment? And just speak to how should we address this question of accountability of these officers? And it seemed to be the more money you make in any position in this country, the less likely you will be a person of color. They only allow us to hire you or work in jobs that pay low wages. For example, in New York City, the maintenance workers only receive like $33,000. Whereas we look at, in like I said, in Dallas, these police officers are making over $6,000 to $8,000. Is that one reason why we don't have many black police officers in these cities? Because of the pay rate is very high? And two, how do we just make these police officers accountable? What do we do?
Yeah, if that's I don't know whether that's the case across the board, but I suspect that there might be similar across the board. But it just speaks to the issue of being colonized people, and you have a high pay rate for the colonizers, which just reinforces the condition. I'm happen to be in Baltimore at the moment. And the six officers have been given additional charges by the state's attorney here, who is a young woman who is on the case. She's of a police family. And usually state's attorneys usually support the police positions and with the prosecutor. But in this case, she's putting a great deal of pressure on the police, and she's delving into this situation. Six officers, three of them are black, and it's a large situation, but some of these officers are being charged because they refused to take action in a condition where harm was evident. That's what the charge is. But there has to be more accountability, and it has to be either through citizen review boards and more pressure on the politicians, but also a general climate has to be attacked. In Baltimore here, right in the city, I just learned yesterday there's a statue in one of the main squares of Judge Taney, Roger Taney, who was the judge who gave the Dred Scott decision many years ago, back in the 19th century, that no black man has rights that the white man is bound to respect. And that decision resounded across the country then, and there's a statue in a main square of this judge in Baltimore to this day. This is part of the problem of the climate in this nation. It speaks to the racist nature of it. And this is much like the statues of the Confederate generals that appear in the southern towns and cities all over the southern part of this nation. But here in Baltimore, there's this Judge Taney. While in Baltimore now, this morning, I'm watching the television coverage of a trial in Cleveland, Ohio. It's from a case, a 2012 case. An officer named Brello jumped upon the hood of a car after a long chase and shoot. It was not a shootout, it was a shoot-in. The cops shot 137 rounds into the car with two black persons, one male, one female. And the last, at the end, when the car was stopped, the officer jumped on the hood of the car and fired through the windshield. When these persons were deemed to be alive and killing them. Well, this case was heard by a judge and was ruled by a judge, and they were acquitted. The officer was acquitted of all charges just today. People are in the streets of Cleveland right now talking, shouting no justice, no peace. But this is just, you know, this stuff is growing because we actually are allowing it to grow. There has to be some action, and you know, by any means necessary at this point, to make it known that black people will not tolerate this kind of thing. So it's part of the climate. Accountability is political, it's cultural, and we do everything that we know how to do. It's not a mystery. We know how to approach these things, but we're not doing it.
It's interesting in terms of your last statement, Brother Mayor, to those who participate on this panel today. I'd like to raise this question from a historical perspective. And the question is, when we first came to this country, there seems very clearly that African lives or black lives didn't matter when we first arrived here. In 2015, there seems to be the same message. African lives or black lives doesn't matter. We live in two societies with different sets of rules of the game. As soon as we come to this reality, if this is a reality, we should stop. Because my argument is, historically, we need to come to some kind of collective understanding. What is the objective conditions in terms of what we are dealing with? Are we two different societies dealing with different rules of the game? Anthony and then Brother Haki, I'd like to respond to the question. Do we live in two different societies dealing with different rules of the game?
I think a part of the problem is that a lot of Africans don't understand that. And I think this is where the desegregation movement or integration had its most devastating effect. Our ancestors were for the most part very clear that we lived in two different societies. But I think the drive toward integration and desegregation, things have become very blurred and very confused. And the fact that you could date people of whatever ethnicity feel like openly, and I think that's confused a lot of our people. And I think the solution to it is, in addition to political education, organization. We must improve our level of organization. Otherwise, we'll be continue to be relegated to merely complaining or pleading every time incidents like this happen. We need permanent organization to try to prevent these from occurring in the future, and also, to get our enemy to understand that there'll be consequences if these things continue. But we're not sufficiently organized to give a more effective response than what we have been giving to what's been happening.
Haki, your response to the question? Well, we live in two different societies.
The simplest way to put it is you have a society. You talk in the context of global capitalism. We have to understand that the system in and of itself ensures that a disproportionate number of people no longer participate in the economic or political system that as it currently exists. And as such, if people can't participate in that system economically or politically, then the question becomes for those in power, the ruling class, what do you do with these people you have no need for? Clearly, when we talk about the African people, our people are disproportionately poor, disproportionately disconnected from the political process. And we pose a unique question, a unique concern for those in power, the question being, what do you do to all these people you don't need? So clearly there's been a war of attrition directed against our people in terms of creative ways, in terms of, getting rid of larger and larger number of our people. It's a very, very slow, protracted process, but nonetheless it's a process and what the system is committed to. So we have to understand that the desire to, whether consciously or unconsciously, to rid itself of African people is something that the system sees as important, simply because when you talk about longevity of the system, you need a certain amount of stability in terms of going forward. And so that stability can be obtained in the minds of the capitalists by ridding themselves of a lot of African people. And so therefore we're under attack, you know, across the board, whether it be economically, politically, or socially. So our people have to come to the realization that, in fact, that no matter how badly you want to be an American, you have to understand the reality is that given the concerns of the system, that it has to be two systems, it has to be two worlds, two people. Justice for some, lack of justice for others is the only way the system can maintain is So this is the thing that we have to understand. This is not going where, and as Liz has alluded to, without political organization, these kind of things can continue unabated.
Brother Moses, your take?
Yeah, this as Mao said, the political economy of the U.S. is rose and thrives on the enslavement of black people. And basically, as Malcolm X said, they brought us here for a job. So we found a situation where we're being exploited for our labor, and when we are able to get a job. And when we do get a job, it's a double standard. We don't get equal work for equal pay. And so it's a racist system. It's an old boy, old girl network that has thrived over the years and continues. Those people who are familiar with each other, there's a natural bias or bias towards looking out for the familiar, and everybody else is alienated. And so as black people, we are the last hired and the first fired, and like you said, we're expendable, and this reflects it. It's a culture of devaluation of black lives. Thank you.
Mel, in terms of some people argue that we also need to look more closely in the arena, in the economic arena, where we can begin to have more access to wealth, equal wealth, also be a moral position of authority. For example, in many cities, you may have African males or black males, but it's the manager that controls the money and the budget. In many cities, you still have overwhelmingly the majority of European or white policemen. We need more policemen who look like us. Do you think, in terms of looking at those arenas, this will serve as a means towards decreasing this level of brutality as relates to police brutality within the African community?
Let me jump in here. Capitalism is going to continue until the government is demolished, basically, and a new government, a socialist, scientific socialist government is established. And I see these problems just going to continue and continue and continue. They may mutate into different forms of oppression and exploitation, and the story may change in the particulars, but the overall story is the same. We're still expendable. We're a source of super profits when we are working. We're a source of super profits. They're making. We're working harder than anybody else for the money that we make. Thank you.
Okay, going back to the mail. You was more males, more black police officers.
The question of police officers is very, very doubtful, very, very touchy, because we have the example of more police officers, black police officers on the South African police force, for example, during the apartheid system. We have it here where black policemen become blue and more so than black, and thus serve the existing regime. So that I don't see that being an answer at all. I think the culture has to be changed as far as police are concerned. I think the fraternal order of policemen must be attacked and dismantle its racist fascist setup, which is a big part of the problem. So that I don't see that as an example. I think our organization, as Anthony said, the increased organization has to include some aim at developing some autonomy, and that might be, for example, where economics is concerned, taking control of the music industry, or at least that part of it that black people are in, and developing an alternative and separate, because this is the only thing that we create manufacture in this society, pretty much, is music. Black people do create music and can own it, but we don't own the music that we create to a large extent. That's something that we should claim as ours and develop an economy around it and be willing to fight for it. Of course, we could develop jeans and other kinds of things, shoes, but at the present moment, we have some background in music and entertainment, and we should own more of that. So that's an economic prospect, but it requires organization and will. And the first item is organization. But I do think organization can come out of some of the crisis that we're being confronted with. And I think, for example, as Ferguson and all of this police brutality is developing some organization. Young people are gaining some organization, and it's serious. It's not just mobilization. Some of them are mobilizing and organizing for the long term, and they are understanding, as a result of these things, more of what we're confronted with, and they're listening to the older folk, the elders, and gaining a sense of the struggle on a larger scale, looking at the larger picture. So there's some hope for the organizing prospect in all of this at this moment.
Okay, we only have about a couple minutes left, and I ask each one of you to give me a 30-second response or less to your final thoughts on the theme, two societies, and different rules of the game, trying to understand it. Now, listen, audience, looking at all of the issues that are going on as it relates to police brutality and how the various agencies are treating people of African descent and various communities of color. What will be your final thought to my listening audience today? I'll start with you quickly, Brother Moses, 30 seconds or less. What would you like to say?
Well, the main thing I want to say is we need to get organized to get rid of this government and just start a new culture and a new socialist system that is based on egalitarian and equality. And that's what we need to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Brother Mayor, 30 seconds left. What would you like to say to our listening audience on the stage tonight?
I'd like to say that I'm going to echo Brother Moses and say, in addition, we should emphasize education and the decolonizing of our minds. That means that we have to learn to be something other than just a piece in a great imperial scheme of our oppressors, and develop our own for our own.
We thank you, Mayor. Haki, your final thoughts, 30-second statement.
Well, people have to determine if they have a right to exist. If, in fact, they feel they have a right to exist, then it's something you have to stand up and fight for. And you can't do that by being ignorant. You have to clarify the issues, take a stand, and fight for what you believe is right.
And, Brother Anthony, 30 seconds or less, please.
The ultimate solution is Pan-Africanism, and that's because we will never have economic and political power until we control our own land base, and we will never be respected or regarded until we have political and economic power, and that comes from control of land, and we have to get organized in order to achieve that.
We thank you and all our participants this evening for giving our time and their perspective on our theme, Two Societies and Different Rules of the Game, Trying to Understand. We'd like to share with our listening audience that you can hear Missing Patriot History